Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Random Heathen Ramblings podcast, where we discuss all sorts of things Germanic heathenry related. My name is Jesse. I am your host. Let's get into it.
Deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Well, hello there. Welcome back, everyone, to the Random Heathen Ramblings podcast here on wherever you're catching it, Spotify, YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. Thank you all so much for being a follower, being a subscriber, and showing your support by upvoting, by liking, by commenting, by sharing, by interacting, and all the ways that you do, and for writing in, calling in, you know, sharing your thoughts in comment sections of the various social media platforms. You guys really helped build this show up into what it has become. You know, we've got a lot of really interesting takes on things. Not, you know, I wouldn't say that they're 100% or always heathen-centric, you know what I'm saying? Like, they're, I think a lot of folks who are diehard recon, hardcore recon heathens would have a lot to say about what I do here, but it is random, you know, random being the operative word. Ramblings of a heathen. And sometimes my heathenry branches off into other aspects of spirituality and stuff. And that's what we've been seeing somewhat lately. If you've been following the podcast and hearing or seeing some of who we've had on here, you'll notice that, you know, we're branching off a little bit. We're reaching out a little bit. Last time we had Benjamin Davidson, who does dream readings or dream interpretations. It's very possible that will be featured on one of his upcoming episodes on his, I think it's the Dreamscapes, but it's his YouTube channel, but Dreamscapes is the platform, not the platform, what am I trying to say? The playlist, there we go. The playlist that his dream interpretations and all that are on, I think. But anyway, check his stuff out, Benjamin the Dream Wizard Davidson. But anyways, today's episode is not about Benjamin. We got someone who is also not heathen coming onto the show here in just a moment. His name is David Masano. I believe he is a like a fitness coach. He has some content out, I believe. We're going to find out more what his, you know, where you can find him, his platforms and all that. I want to say he might also have a podcast. I'm going to confirm that once we get him on here, because if he does, and, you know, fitness and all that is your wheelhouse, and you really like to pick someone's brain or see what other people in the fitness circuits are doing, then he's going to be the one to check out. But the reason why he's going to be on here today is not just about the fitness and finding, you know, help through fitness and finding ways to improve our quality of life through fitness. But also, his background is a bit of an interesting story, and I'm going to wait to elaborate more on that once he gets on here to talk about his background, his whole life. I think he is a military veteran, younger guy, but a military veteran nonetheless. He also comes from a pretty large family. I want to say his family, he is one of either 8 or 11 children. And so, it was like, I read his bio and learned a little bit about him from what information he shares on his platforms. And I thought, man, this would be a great guy to have come on here. He did reach out to me first. So thank you, David, for reaching out to ask about coming on the show, because I guess from the description of what he had seen online about, you know, what this podcast is about, he had some interest in wanting to learn a bit more about it. So, you know, this could be an interesting podcast, something a little bit different to talk about things, again, not heathen related, but who knows? It is a heathen podcast, so we always somehow find a way to get there. So before we get started, do be sure to check the Linktree link in the comment or the description area and show notes of the podcast for all the ways that you can support what I do here. All the links to everything that you can follow, subscribe to, become a member of, anything like that, you know, it's all down there in that Linktree link. So do be sure to check it out before the end of this video. While you're watching this, if it is on YouTube, please be sure to give this video a thumbs up, share it around. And if you're listening to this on any other platforms, whenever, wherever you're listening to, do be sure to upvote this. Follow along if what you are into kind of lines up with what I'm doing here talking. So it would be great. We'd greatly appreciate it. So don't want to, you know, waste any more time or delay any further. So joining me today, I'm going to be welcoming in David Masano. He's a fitness coach, I think. But yes, welcome to the show, David Masano. Let's get into it. All right, folks. Well, like I was saying earlier on in the intro, we've got a new kind of guest on the show today. We've got David Masano, a young gentleman out on the West Coast who is the face and the inspiration, I guess, behind, is it Vinny Vidi Vici? Is that right? Fitness?
Yes.
All right, cool. So, David, welcome to the Random Heathen Ramblings podcast, man. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, man. Thank you.
Absolutely. So I think it would be great to just give the people that are watching and listening a little bit about yourself. You and I talked a little bit before, you know, something about your background, but I guess let's start, if you don't mind, with this Vinny Vidi Vici. I know that's Latin, if I'm remembering correctly. It means something. Why don't you elaborate and explain to people?
Yeah, so it's actually, there's two Latin quotes that really have stuck with me. It's that one, which means I came, I saw, I conquered. I'm very adamant about that. When I do see something and I want it, I'm going to conquer it. So that's like the whole meaning behind the fitness part, the nutrition and the mindset. The other one is cogito ergo sum, is I thought, therefore I am, which is also very true to my heart. So basically, like, that's what my teaching is around. Basically, we go from changing up your nutrition and your working out, and sometimes we don't even change or add any type of workouts into your nutrition. Because if you think of it, when people are super overweight, like tons and tons of pounds on them, like 300 pounds, you think they're going to want to go to the gym? No. So why would you send somebody to the gym when they don't want to go? Why not make it easier? That's why a lot of these fitness gurus are just like, I don't think they understand what they're doing sometimes. It's, don't go to the gym if you're 300 pounds. Start with your nutrition. And sometimes you could do nutrition with them and they never even go to the gym and get in better shape than most people. And that's what I try to do, is try to show people how simple it can be, how simple it could be to just go to the gym. My main thing too is that I show people to have fun with it. I had a client, actually, my biggest result I had with a client was I had him show up at the gym, and as soon as he showed up, the rule was he had to leave. And he did that for 3 months and lost 45 pounds, because sooner or later he started wanting to work out. So it's all about incorporating habits, incorporating things into the program of our subconscious. And when you start to program, you can't change yourself with the same self that you are. It's almost impossible to do. It's like drug withdrawal. So you have to learn how to do things that will change and alter you that you can't see. And that's what a coach is for. So that's kind of what I build my things around. Like, people think, oh, you need to cut out this candy, you need to cut out all this bad processed food. And it's like, no, you don't. There's a few tweaks that you need to make from that. Maybe eat less of that, but you can still eat it.
I see. So you seem to have a pretty light-handed approach with a strong vision in mind. You know, it's not all just gung-ho, run in there, guns blazing, you know, let's see how much we can lift, that sort of thing.
Unless they want to. All depends. And I make everyone take a test before, when I get on that call with them, I have to really understand who I'm working with. So if it's somebody that's like, I need to lose this weight because I'm addicted, or I need to get away from this vice and I need to change. I need to make a new habit. And I want to try out the gym, or my relationship with my family, or a divorce is going to happen, or I'm going to lose my business or job. Cause I mostly work with business owners. That's my main focus, is I work with family business owners. And usually it's people that are overweight, that don't have enough energy to actually go through the day and work on their business, or people that are struggling to keep their family life incorporated with their business. And it's soon to be a divorce, or their children don't get enough time with their children. And that's where my job comes in, is I teach them how to incorporate a little bit of gym, how to incorporate a little bit of nutrition, and make little tweaks to change their physique, which changes their metabolism, which changes how they feel, which changes how they think about themselves when they look in the mirror. All these little domino effects change who they are. And like I said, it depends on who the person is. So if their why is like, oh, I need to do this or I'm going to die, we start hitting it pretty hard. Whereas it's like, oh, if I just want to try this out, we'll hit it out and they'll see who I'm about and what I'm about. And then we start upping it as time goes on.
Okay. I like that. So you kind of tailor it to the client, you know what I mean? It's not a textbook, every one size fits all sort of approach.
That's the thing, is I think a lot of coaches today think, oh, you need to do it my way because my way worked. But that's not the point of coaching. If you ever, and I've had multiple mentors, I'm on my third mentor now, and I've paid a lot of people or a lot of money to work personally with experts. And that's the key to success. People want to ask what the fast lane to wealth and success is. Buy somebody that's already where you're at. That's how you do it. Work with somebody that you're already, that's already where you're at, or where you want to be. Yes. And then you'll get there a lot faster. But my key thing is that I've learned from all my mentors is they don't, it's none of their stuff. Like, they don't use any of what they've done on me. They show me what I'm strong at, and then they show me how to incorporate that and make it a lifestyle. And that's what I show people, is like, we need to make this a lifestyle. What's the easiest way to make this a lifestyle? Okay, if we make a 3 to 10% change within ourselves every week, what is that going to look like? And I'm going to ask them that question. Okay, what is one thing that you know you can do this week that's easy and simple that will move the needle this week? And that's what I'm here for. I'm here to guide you. I'm here to simply show you that, okay, perfect. This is how we're going to do that. This is how we can achieve that. And I'll slowly, it's almost like a therapist. The therapist asks you these different questions, and then you finally find the solution. That's what I am. It's because so many people think in these limited mindsets, like, I can't get there, I'm too fat, I don't know what I'm doing, things like that. And then my job is to break through that barrier, to let them understand, no, you do know what you need to do, and this is how we're going to do it. And we slowly break down those barriers. Then sooner or later, 3, 4, 5 months, these people are peak level of fitness. It's so easy to make a lifestyle. They don't go to the gym any longer. I've never had a client that went to the gym longer than 35 minutes a day for 5 days a week, sometimes only 3 days a week. And I've never had them cut out candy. I never had them cut out processed food, none of that stuff. You can still eat that. We focus on one goal and one goal only. And I give them a calorie count. And the only thing we focus on in that calorie count is protein. So let's say I give them a 2200 calorie macronutrient plan. And then in that calorie plan, you have to get 180 grams of protein. Protein is not a dense calorie dense food. So let's say you eat your 180 grams of protein, and that only took up about 1200 calories for the day. You now have almost 1000 calories left to eat. So what can you do? You just backfill that. You can eat candy, but just make sure you just stay in the calorie count. You can eat all that unhealthy food, but make sure you get your protein intake. You know what I'm saying? So we don't focus on fat. We don't focus on carbs. We focus on your protein, and then you can backfill from there.
Do you think that, being so I guess like lean, I don't say lenient because I know there's structure and I know that there's like a plan in place, but what I'm getting from you is, you know, you're not like so rigid, I guess, with it, you know, like there's, again, everything's tailored to the person, but do you think that when people start to take control of their fitness and their wellness and their health, and they start realizing that, yeah, I can eat some of these things, do you think that eventually like the mind kicks over and is like, but I don't need that crap. I don't need that processed junk. I can fill those gaps. I can fill that caloric intake with better quality things versus just something to fill a space. Does that happen for you with your clients? And
not only, so everything that I teach my clients is what I've done. Anything that I tell my client, it's not something that I haven't done before. So I've tried so many diets. My key thing is I go around trying new diets to give the exact experience of what it's truly like. This recent diet that I've been on, I'm actually working up towards something. It started out as a 12-hour fast with a, what was it? Keto. So it was a 12-hour fast with keto. And that's what I did. It was just keto and a 12-hour fast. Very simple. I had a calorie deficit, but with keto, you are able to retain more fat. So it's, mm-hmm. it's a lot more fat, which the way it works is truly amazing. And I know a lot of people hate keto, but if you've
I've never messed around with it. Yeah.
The thing that I liked most about it was the mental clarity that I had with it. I felt so mentally clear. The difference though, I didn't like it at the start because it was the withdrawals were real at the start. But once you get past the withdrawal part, it's different. You start to feel good. You're mentally clear. You don't. And the key thing about keto is you're trying to keep control of your insulin and glycogen levels, which is your energy level. Mm-hmm. And basically when you have carbs, it usually spikes.
Yeah.
But there are ways to work around with that. Like athletes need carbs. So it's different. But when you're on keto, basically your insulin levels are not fluctuating because you have no carbs in you. So it's just really high fat and really high protein, but the proteins are a lot leaner. It's more so a lot of fat, which helps you just slim down. And I've had the most amazing transformation I had was a lady that lost 100 pounds in a year. Never, like, she went from fat to skinny extremely fast, and it made me cry. It was crazy because that wasn't the only thing that changed. Her relationship changed. She got a new job. She became closer with their family. And that's what I go for. You're going to look good either way, but when you look good and feel good and think better, everything else in your life is going to be better. But
yeah,
key thing with, like, I just started, I got into the carnivore diet. So I don't know if you know mm-hmm. the carnivore diet. It's very, very simple. And it's based off of like a Northern Icelandic diet and all way back in the day. So you can have fruit. The more extremist with the diet, they don't. It's literally all it is meat, salt, and water. That's all you can have. But you can eat whatever you want. So you basically eat intuitively. And the crazy thing is you'll lose tons of weight because protein keeps you fuller and you get a lot of fat. Oh, you can eat butter too. So you need to eat butter with it to get enough fat because now your source of energy is coming from fat.
From fat, so exactly. Yeah.
You can eat whatever you want on the diet. And I lost 2 pounds. Like I didn't have much to lose, but I was 178 pounds. I lost 2 pounds in 2 weeks. And lost almost, I was 6% body fat when I started. I lost another percent of body fat, eating way more calories than I was actually eating on the keto diet. And it was crazy to me, but I'm a CrossFit athlete too. So I work out a lot because I compete in competitions. Gotcha. But the main thing with a diet, a lot of people think, oh, I can do this for a month and I'm good. No, like you kind of have to get acclimated. Your body has to get acclimated. Like I put myself through a lot with these different diets to show people exactly what happens instead of just giving them this number and these different analytics, I show them what it's exactly like, and I give them real feedback. This is what happens. This is how I feel. I made a lot of mess ups. Like when I first started the carnivore, I tried to get off of caffeine at the exact same time, which was a huge mistake. You don't want to withdraw from caffeine the same time you're changing your diet.
Yeah,
it will really mess up your chemicals, your hormones.
I tell you, I did something one time, not to, I'll let you continue, but just to insert something here. I did something one time. It was like a total body cleanse plan. It was a 21 day long program. And there were supplements and stuff that they, you know, so you buy this kit, Beachbody, I think was the name of it. I don't know if you ever heard of it.
Yeah.
Okay. But they send you like supplements and, you know, I hated it. I was miserable for, you know, 2 weeks, well, 3 weeks, basically. I lost like 15 pounds.
Okay. Yeah.
But,
yeah.
But it wasn't sustainable. And that's what I always get. I'm like, it was great, I guess, for just like, if you wanted to, I don't know, do like a hard reset on your body, like, cause it cuts everything. Eventually it cuts everything out. Like I stopped drinking alcohol, no caffeine, no other stimulants like tobacco. So, you know, vaping, nothing like that. I mean, I pretty much like changed my diet overnight and took out all of the other extracurricular components to my life. And I guess I got used to it at some point, but I was like, I can't wait for this fucking thing to be over. Cause it was like, it felt like a chore, you know what I mean? And I don't know how you've encountered with people that probably come to you having done other diet plans and stuff. And they're like, I don't want this to be another fad or another, you know, it's just something that I start overnight, and you know, start one day and then, you know, a week or so later, I'm burnt out on it. Right.
Yeah. That's the key is a lot of these gurus now, they're like, do it my way. And I joined a group and that's kind of how it is. Like, excuse my language, but they'll just say, oh, you're just being a bitch. Like, you know, it's, you're not man enough or you're not disciplined enough or you don't want it bad enough. And yes, you can say that. You can say that. But realistically, is that what we're going for? Like, is that what we want to be known for? Like, what? You can definitely put pressure on them. There's definitely clients where it's like, okay, this is what we're going to work on this week. I always make small implementations. Like, for example, if somebody came up to me right now and they had a candy addiction, they drunk six beers a night, they drunk a six pack, they drunk tons of alcohol, and barely any really healthy food, and all of it was like top ramen, things like that.
Yeah.
The first thing, and they don't work out, the first thing I'm going to do is not tell them cut all the drinking out. It's slow withdrawals. Remember 3 to 10%, depending on where they're at. Like if they say, hey, like my relationship's going in the gutter and I'm about to lose my wife, I need to get in shape and stop doing this stuff, we're going to be a little more extreme.
Yeah.
Whereas they're like, I just want to see if this will work. I heard that you know what you're doing. Okay, like we're going to change. What's one thing that you know that you can do this week that'll change for you? Okay, you drink all this alcohol. Let's just cut back a little bit and drink more water. Then by the end of the week, let's see how you feel. I want you to tell me how you feel. Oh, you feel better? Perfect. Okay, now you're sleeping better too? Oh, even better. Like now we're seeing it's wins. You gotta accumulate all these little wins. And sooner or later, you're gonna start thinking clear, feeling better, sleeping better. And all this little stuff, you're gonna be like, oh, I don't wanna go back to that other stuff. That's what happened to me. When I first got into fitness and nutrition, I was addicted to weed. I don't even think you could get addicted to weed. But yeah, I was smoked a lot of weed. I drunk alcohol. These were my vices, but I love people that come to me that have an emotional attachment to food. Why? Because that was me. And when you learn to go inside of yourself and deal with the true problem of why am I actually eating all this food, then you start to understand why, like what you need to change. For me, I always had this emotional attachment. I was bullied when I was a kid. So my biggest thing was I wanted to get big and strong so no one would ever mess with me again. And I look like this big, jacked, 185-pound dude, and no one will mess with me. You know, that's that was what I wanted to go. But then when I'm around food, that grew up so much in me that I needed to eat and eat and eat, because I was just a skinny kid when I was getting bullied. And then when I started packing on muscle, I had to eat and eat and eat and eat. And then I made myself feel bad that when I didn't eat, because then I was going to be like, I'm going to get bullied. Mm. Then it became a subconscious thing that I was unconsciously eating all this food, that whenever food was next to me, I'd just start munching on food. And it made me that sensation of feeling better. But when you start to become conscious about these things, they get a lot easier to deal with. But it's little small implementations. You change, like when I did this carnivore diet, the first week was the hardest. But then I started incorporating just eating, just let my body intuitively tell me when I'm full. And protein makes you fuller a lot faster. And I got even more shredded than I was. I'm at about 5% body fat, but even more shredded than I was on a normal diet. And I feel the biggest thing is my energy levels, excuse me, are peaked. Like I've never felt better. And on top of that, my performance in the gym has went up. I feel mentally clear and I love it. But the next part, I'm going into what is called an OMAD. I don't know if you know it, the OMAD diet.
But I don't think I've heard of that one.
It's like the last part of the diet. It's not extreme, but it takes a while to get used to. I've heard a lot of people that do these, and most of them are monks. A lot of them are monks, but there are elite athletes that do this too. The OMAD diet is basically you only eat one meal a day, but it's a ginormous meal.
And like you eat all your calories for the day.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
But it's a massive meal. Like it's a very, very big meal. And then you fast for the rest of the day. And basically the first week I've always, from what I've known and seen the different experts that have done it and the different, most of them, like I said, are people that live in the forest, people that are monks, people that are very extreme athletes. And those are the ones on this type of diet. But the OMAD diet is like, it's next level. A lot of people think that, or a lot of people say how they start to feel after a month of just being on it and what it does to their body, and not only their body, what they start to do to get away. Like they get away from that sensation of trying to eat food. But would I throw somebody on the OMAD diet right away? Definitely not. Like, not happening ever. Unless, like, of course you've practiced this, because it's like, it's literally like a 23-hour fast.
Yeah.
And then just gorge on food, and then you go straight back into it. And the reason why you gorge on food at night is because you gorge on so much food that you just knock out. Mm-hmm. And then you go to sleep very full, wake up. The first week they say you wake up extremely hungry all the time. But it's just little increments that you make towards success.
Yeah. Yeah, trying different things. And that almost sounds like maybe what would have been more of a primal way of life, you know, because if you think about just what we have access to as a, you know, modern humanity, I mean, everything is so readily available. You're hungry, you can open up your fridge or open up your cabinet, your pantry, go to the store, drive through a fast food place. I mean, everything is so easily accessible. Whereas, you know, not even all that long ago, you know, the families had to, you know, cook and prepare their meals or grow their own foods if they wanted to eat. It wasn't like, oh, I'm hungry, let's just open up the icebox or the freezer and cook something. It was, if you were hungry, you had to go catch it or go pick it out of your garden or go to your root cellar where things were stored during the non-growth seasons, right? The winter, the leaner months, and prepare something. Everything, you had to work for it. And I think that now here and today in modern times is, you know, a lot of people become so complacent. I mean, we're all guilty of it. I'm not trying to say like I'm better than you, because I've got to do the same thing, you know. Oh, I'm hungry, open up the fridge, see what's in there. But I've also grown up with a lifestyle that, you know, I worked on a farm for over a decade. Everybody in our family or and friends had gardens, you know what I mean? So I grew up around the idea of living off of the land, growing, raising, harvesting your own food. And it's so enriching and it's so fulfilling, kind of like how you go and you work out, right? You're exerting physical effort and you feel better about the meal that you're about to eat or that you have eaten because I earned this, you know, it gives me the energy, the fuel to want to go and put it to use, you know? And yeah, that's what exactly. I like about how fitness can overall help us holistically, right? It's not just how good we look or the physical things that we're capable of doing when we embrace that. It's everything benefits. Again, you have a clearer mind. You have a better outlook on life. Depression doesn't affect so many people that are focused on health and wellness, you know, because why? They're feeding their body. They're feeding this machine with quality things, with good things. And so the machine runs better. Every in and out, inside and out, right?
Yeah. And that's that. A lot of people think that fitness is to look better. There's scientific proof that after you work out, there's serotonin release inside of your body that, and people do not like listen to this. Like, this is the number one thing why people actually like become gym rats. It's not because they enjoy doing it. It's the feeling they're after.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of people that go to the gym, like, you might think they're happy. Like, these people that do Ironmans and these people that do these different crazy fleets of marathons and triathlons, that is, you have something deep you're dealing with, and that's how they deal with it. Mm. And I've known a lot of, like, there's a lady, I don't remember off the top of my head what her name is, but she runs triathlons and eats whatever she wants. But I mean, you can do that when you're a triathlon runner. Like,
you're burning through it. Yeah.
Yeah. She eats whatever. She drinks beer, eats whatever. You can do that. But you look at her and she looks like a normal person. She enjoys eating. She enjoys having fun. She goes out. She enjoys life. But when you watch her work out, she has a demon inside of her, like, definitely tormenting her. And that's what people don't understand. Like, a lot of people's lives, like, I had stopped working out for a while and I realized I couldn't hold that up. Like, you kind of get addicted to the feeling of actually working out because like every day I try to put this message out there. Like, I will make your workouts fun. I will make them interesting. You don't have to be there long. My goal is to get you in the gym, get you out of the gym, make you feel good, and you go and conquer that day. I could be like having a bad mood, be in a bad mood. I go touch some weights, man. Let's go have a party. Like, this is the best.
Yeah.
Why is that serotonin chemical release in your body? And it just lights you up. And that's what people don't understand. They think, oh, like, these people are just working out just to look good. That's not at all true. Like,
the byproduct of it. It's just, I mean, it happens. So
yeah,
it's like a nice.
Exactly. But even like in the Viking days, like, those people, the Romans, like, the great athletes, when they worked out like that, they got addicted to it. Like, that was their way of getting away because you actually feel something.
I've also felt that with doing any sort of constructive behavior, constructive activity, right? Anything because, like, let's face it, there is a mental aspect to fitness, right? I mean, you're calculating, you know, reps, you're doing things like you're counting, like I'm saying, like, there's cognitive things going on in your mind, but anything like that, whether it's gardening, whether it's hiking, any sort of physical activity, right? It doesn't even have to be going to the gym per se, but it does. It releases those feel good, you know, that your dopamine levels rise. It's that serotonin's released. Like, you feel overall just better about things. And I, you know, I've worked out, not recently, but I used to be, as a kid, I had a propensity to just be a little pudgy. And my uncle at the time, you know, he was like, come lift weights with me. And, you know, he had like a gym in his house, and he also had a membership, but we would work out in his basement. And he eventually had gotten to the point where he had like a full gym in his basement, man, like, you know, Smith machines, you know, leg presses, benches, everything, dumbbells, free weights, just everything. And it was like, come and do this with me. And that's when I was a kid, man. I'm talking like 13, 14 years old, maybe. That's what got me hooked on it. And I worked out, like, I would get up and I would go work on the farm. I'd go to my regular job, which was very physically demanding. And then I would get off work and I would go work out. And I look back and I'm like, I didn't even need to, because from all the work that I was doing on the farm or at my job, like, it was all very physically demanding work and labor. But something about going to the gym, something about going and doing it for the fun of it, not to create something, not to build something, but just to, like, I don't know, just do it, you know? And it's like, it does something to you. I felt really good about it. And of course, you know, the results of which were, I wasn't pudgy anymore, right? I was cut, I was ripped. I could lift more weight, but for my size, than what the average person would think. You know, I was maybe like a 145 at the time, you know, but I was lifting, you know, 3-4 times my weight.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And people are like, how is that little squirt able to do that? I'm like, just, you know.
Yeah. Being so that I have active, a question so. For you. So mm-hmm. then, okay, you grew up on a farm. Did you guys ever eat Did you guys eat breakfast?
Yeah, actually, so it was a beef farm. So we raised beef cattle.
Okay.
And so I would usually get up like before the sun would come up, you know, so it was really early. I wouldn't eat then. We would go do our chores. But then we would have a mid-morning, like around 8 or so, we would stop our chores and then have something to eat, some sort of breakfast, you know.
Nice.
And then I would come back home and fuel up for the day. I would have like a second breakfast, if you will.
Yeah.
But there was always, there was always like something there, whether it was, you know, pancakes or whether it was, you know, some kind of whole grain something, mm-hmm. you know, something like a buckwheat, something heavy, you know, something to really sit heavy with you, but give you that energy.
Yeah.
To do all that stuff. But we did.
Yeah. That was, so the main reason why crazy question. I asked it because I just like got into this understanding. Like, I fast for a reason. I think there's so many scientific researches, not even just scientific, but anybody that actually does fast, they start to realize what it does for you. But even at people that work out, when they start to fast, if you were to do just one, I think it's a 19 to 36 hour fast once a week, mm-hmm. your growth hormones triple in just that short amount of time. And like, that was my biggest thing. I know we had just started talking about previously, right before that last topic, was about the just going out and hunting for your food and getting your stuff. So there's actually people, and everyone keeps going to visit them. It's all over YouTube, but a lot of very like the that meat eating guy, like Primal guy, I forget his name.
Liver King.
Yes, Liver
Brian
King.
Johnson,
Liver
King yeah.
went out there.
Yeah, those the modern day primitive tribes in like Africa or South America and different places. Yeah.
And if you see what they do, like, it's literally like there was I think his name is David Chu. I was listening to the Joe Rogan podcast, and he said he had went out there to go live with them for a while. And what he found out was just how simple their life was. Like, they would wake up, and I'm not saying that I want to do that or any, like, but if that's what you want to do, go try it. I love trying new things. That's my thing. I want to try it out for myself, see if it's true. Mm-hmm. But he was just talking about how simple their life was. They had the first week he went through like withdrawal, like with his electronics and just city life and things like that. And then he just came down and just like was very calm, very relaxed the second week. And all they did was just run to get their food all morning. They would hunt for their food, come back at night, have a celebration for the food the men caught, and eat, and then go to sleep and do it all over again. Yeah. And it was like, man, like, that's crazy. But not only that, like, a lot of people that have gone out there are scientists, and not only scientists, but athletes have gone out there, and they talk about the athletic performance and the physical structure of these people. Yeah. And all they eat is, it's meat, honey, and I think fruits. And that's literally like the carnivore diet. Like, mm-hmm. the carnivore diet is basically to replicate, it's animal mm-hmm. products, but it's to replicate how it used to be back in the day. Like, they ate mostly meat because that was all that was there. And then during certain seasons of the year, you would get fruits and stuff from berries and things like that. So, but if you see these people, like, they're ripped, just mm-hmm. the most ripped black people, like, they're massive, like the most athletic people I've ever seen. Like,
oh yeah,
they're better than a lot of them. They had did like some studies on their vertical jumps, and some of them have 60 just standing in place. It's almost like a 50-60 inch vertical jump. On top of that, they just climb trees like monkeys.
Yeah,
they have different like things inside of there. They have different, I forget what it was, but it's like some biomes in their body that they're able to go and grab honey from the bees. And when the bees sting them, nothing happens. They don't
feel it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like they're ripped, jacked, all that stuff. And it's like, that was what really made me go on the carnivore diet. I'm like, and and the other thing was that I'm a big fan of Jordan Peterson. And he talked about the different things, the different health defects that I had on him. I had a few. Three of the biggest things that I noticed when I went on the carnivore was after the first week, I had a cyst that I had been dealing with for almost a year now. And it was in my neck. It wasn't cancer or anything. It was just a cyst that disappeared. That was the first thing I noticed after a week. It disappeared. Yeah. The other thing, I had like a small back pain for years now. That went away and I've only been on it for 3 weeks, but I always usually feel it during my workouts.
Yeah.
I haven't felt nothing. On top of that, my energy and mood levels have never been better. I stopped taking caffeine after the first week. I was very acclimated to it, and I didn't feel like I needed it. Do I still have it once in a while? Yeah, I do it like once or twice a week.
Yeah. But kind of an enjoyable thing, yeah. Like just
for sure. Enjoy. Yeah. But that was the key thing is like, that's why I try it. And then even with the OMAD, that's the next level thing I want to really see and give people feedback of what it really is. Cause
yeah.
I mean, we keep having these certifications or these scientists tell us this is, you shouldn't do this because of research. But I feel like until you really understand it and you try it out, and I understand that some things you can't try out, you're not really going to know how it feels or what it does for your body, you know? So right. That's like my main goal is everything that I tell people and everything that I give to people, I've experienced and tried to go through with the fullest. And whenever I go on a diet, I try, like even the carnivore, it should last at least 6 months just to get the full effect and give a good example of what it's like.
Yeah.
And a lot of people say, oh, like you can't sustain a no carb diet like that because it's zero carbs in your diet. It's all protein and all fat. And people are like, oh, like there's unique carbs for energy. And beg to differ. I thought I was going to crash. That was my first thought, is like I was going to be slumped. The first day I felt massive fatigue. The second day it all went away. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I just never really felt anything. And then a lot of people say, oh, like your gut's going to get messed up. My blood results came back actually better than they were before I started it. And it was crazy just to see these little effects and being able to try out all this stuff.
Yeah. You're like a walk-in testimony, you know, and then you can pass on that to your clients, which I do want to mention or give you a chance to mention. You know, you're talking about all these great things that you've experienced and that you use this to help others. How do you do that? I mean, so like for people that want to, you know, follow you, or I'm assuming you have a social media platform or platforms that you share all this stuff on or journal it. How do people get in touch with you for this, or where can people find you?
Yeah. So I'm mostly biggest on Instagram, still building a Facebook, still building a TikTok. I run mostly everything out of Instagram though. That's where I communicate. People can find all my information all on Instagram. It's on Facebook and TikTok too, but my Instagram is David_Masano, 1 of 18. My Facebook, you can just look me up as David Masano. And then my TikTok is going to be Cogito Ergo Sum Fitness. And that's what I go by on TikTok. And I'll have that all given to you as well.
Yeah, it's going to be linked and stuff. You know, I always like to give my guests a chance to kind of plug their stuff, and you know, for folks listening and watching, you know, as usual, it'll be linked in the show notes in the description. So you know, we've been talking a lot about the what, you know what I mean, like what you do. We got into a little bit of an idea of the how, you know, and going through things. Let's talk a bit about why. why fitness? Why wealth or health and wellness? What got you to this point in your life to want to pursue this as a career, really? I mean, you're taking this really seriously. You're not just casual about it. So let's get into the why. What brought you there? Why are you doing this?
Yeah, it's such a deep question, and it hits home for me because I had started this journey when I was young. When I was 14, I was actually a suicide attempt. I just didn't find any meaning. And I know that sounds very young, and it was young, but I started to become more conscious and understanding of life. I grew up in a cult religion with a very big family, 18 brothers and sisters.
18?
Yes.
See, I thought it was something. I mean, I read your bio one time, but before you came on, and I'm like, I think he's a family of, it's like 8 or 11. I mean, 18, that's like a tribe, dude. Like, that's a, yeah. That's a clan for sure.
Yeah, and there's so many. I will never, ever forget. Like, it was the best experience that you could possibly have. Like, it's, you're around so many different personalities. You're never alone. You cannot be alone. You cannot be alone to yourself. You can't keep quiet. It's there. You're going to be brought out of your shell. And that was one thing that I was thankful for being in that family, is now we have each other, you know, like they know me and they know a lot about me, and a lot of what you are when you're young doesn't really leave you. Unless you really make a try or a conscious effort to make a difference of who you were and the things that were brought up in you. So one of the biggest things with that religion that I grew up in is it was a lot of limiting beliefs. Like, you can't be rich. If you're rich, riches are the root of all evil, which totally false. If you don't believe in God, or if you don't become a Christian in this religion, you'll go to this fiery depth of hell and die. They're forever being tormented. And these things lingered with me. And I never, when I was young, I was like, man, like, I don't know if I want to, what I wanted to do. And I was battling this, like, am I going to really go to hell, or can I go and experience life and make a difference? Cause I wanted to make an impact. I knew I was a leader as a young kid. I was always the captain of the football team. I always did the best in the sports. I always gave my all. Always did the best in school, straight A student. I gave everything, and I always will give everything. But there comes a point where you start to get something that'll battle with you, and you have to battle with something. And at age 14, I started battling with that. I decided to keep going, and there became fitness. I found a guy by the name of Nick Best, and he started my passion for fitness, and he went through the exact same thing. For those that don't know, Nick Best is one of the world's strongest men. He's in the master's division, which means he's older than 50 years old, has one of these massive duties, like 300 pounds, squatting 800 pounds, deadlift over 1,000 pounds, that type of stuff. Big dude. I met him for the first time when I was starting high school in Las Vegas when I was 17 years old. And he turned my whole world around, and just the words that he said will always stick with me. He said, if I can do it, you can too. And when I had started this journey, I decided to give up. I was at 17 years old. I was already smoking weed and drinking. Like, I was already deep into that stuff. But I decided that if I wanted to give that stuff up and have a successful life, I would need to give up that. And the way to give that up, I would have to replace it with something else. And I replaced it with fitness, and fitness became my drug. And when I started working out all the time, I slowly started to see over time what it did for me. And I got to see some amazing fitness people. I seen Matt Martins Lisi's, which is another world's strongest man competitor, in person. I got to shake his hand, trained at the same gym as him. It was nice. An amazing, amazing experience. And I got to meet all these different people. Sebum, I got to meet him in person. All these big fitness idols that my mentor is actually Wes Watson. A lot of you guys might not know him, but he's a big guy, came out of the penitentiary and now is just massive, 225 pound dude, just straight veins. But these are the people I aspire to be like. And one of the things that my mentor has told me is to become the person that you admire inside and out, and then give him to the world. And fitness has changed my life. When I first met Wes Watson, he had yelled at me multiple times, like, get your shit together, like, stop being a bitch. Like, you have this great thing inside of you.
Yeah.
And you're not giving it to the world. Like, what are you scared of?
Right.
And that's what the hero's journey is. If anyone were to look up the hero's journey, there's actually a circle diagram, and it goes from the unknown to the known, or the known to the unknown. And the first part of the hero's journey is a call to adventure. And from the call to adventure, you go into, you're still in the unknown, then you meet a mentor, and then that mentor starts to take you into the unknown. And then the unknown, you start going into trials and tribulations. If a lot of you guys read this book, all it's called is The Hero with 1,000 Faces. It's actually the true title, A Hero with 1,000 Faces. And it's by Joseph Campbell, and it'll literally take you down into where you're at in your journey. Everyone's in a different spot. Everyone thinks they see these 22-year-olds and they see these rich people, and they're like, I need to be there. But no, if you read The Hero's Journey, you'll start to understand that, oh, I'm at this point in my journey. Mm-hmm. And it'll start to enlighten you. Okay, that's, everything's happening exactly in this sequence. And that's kind of what he told me to read this book. And he gave me the blueprint and told me to follow it every day. And that if I followed it, it would work out for me because of the talents that I had and the true story that I had. But one of the things he taught me to do is to talk from the heart. There's a gap, you know, there's people that the gap is basically, this is who you are to the outside world, and this is who you are truly inside of yourself. And when you close that gap and you're able to give who you are inside of yourself to the world, then everything you say, it could be the dumbest thing you ever said. People would believe it, but because it's from here and it's aligned and there's no gap and you're not having one thing inside of yourself and another on the outside, they would believe it. Why? Because you're in tune. And that's one of the key things is, and I might sound passionate about it, but that's truly what it is. I speak from the heart, and coming from the point of death, one of the biggest things that I learned is you have to kill yourself mentally. You have to be able to kill yourself and be reborn mentally again, because all those programs are running inside of yourself. You have your subconscious brain that is your storage of all the data that you had in your life. And those things that you are emotionally attached with will stick there until you get over it. Yeah. And that's what the thing is. Like, people think they need to overcome their thoughts. It's not overcoming the thoughts. It's overcoming the emotion. When you overcome the emotion, the thought will immediately go away. Because as soon as you stop giving it that emotional attachment, it has nothing to feed off of anymore. And for me, it was the biggest relief. It's like lifting 1,000 pounds off of your chest and you start breathing this clear air again, you know? And that was, for me, that's what it was. And when I had met my mentor, he took me into the unknown, and that's where you find your journey. It's not where things are lightened. When you can see the path, you're probably on somebody else's road. You're probably on somebody else's journey, following their journey. But when you go to the darkest path and you go to the path where you can't see in front of you, that's your journey. And that's what I chose to do. And fitness has become such an inspiration. When I first started nutrition, I was mentally going through it at that point. Yeah. And I was 20 years old and I was fit. I was a CrossFit athlete. I was very fit. Don't get me wrong, I was competing already and I felt really good. Mentally, I didn't feel really good. And I always woke up, worked out, but I always felt like just fatigued and drained after the workout. I couldn't do anything. I needed a nap in the afternoon. And then I started to change my nutrition and everything, my mentality about life, the way I worked, and all of that stuff. So that's why I'm so passionate. And my goal is to become that person, and I live that person every day, and I give that person to the world. And that's my goal, is to become the person I totally admire inside and out and give him to the world.
Yeah. You got to take care of yourself from within. You know, I used to do martial arts training in my youth. And one of the things that our instructor always said was, you train the mind, and the body follows.
Love it.
But and it's like, well, what does that even mean? And he gave some examples of like Olympic athletes who would not do any sort of physical training prior to an event or something like that. I mean, they would obviously, but there were times where they'd be like just sitting there relaxing by the pool or laying in a chair and just chilling, you know? And, but in their mind, they're going through the course, they're going through the thing that they're about to do. They're mentally lifting those weights. They're mentally skiing through those courses. They're mentally doing the thing and they're preparing themselves internally. And it's been proven that, you know, you can condition your body to a certain degree by just the sheer willpower of doing it. And I've talked about stuff like this on this podcast before about how powerful our minds, how we are, our actual selves, not this physical shell that people interact with on a, you know, on the physical level, but what and who we truly are. We're powerful beings. We are so capable of doing great things that it's not fully unlocked for a lot of people. You know, that journey that you're talking about, that going into the unknown, there's a lot of that is very close to my heart and in my own personal practices, because there comes a point, and it resonates with me what you were saying about being on someone else's path. If you see the path in front of you, then chances are you're following someone else's. They've already paved that way for you, right? And I think a lot of us, no matter what our path in life is, whether it's, you know, fitness or spirituality or any other sort of thing, you know, whatever we're in doing, whatever wherever we are in our journey, we need a place to start. We need a place to begin. And really where we get to learning things is when we go off the beaten path, when we get off those exits and get lost, like purposely. You know, in a way, like I want to get lost out here and try to find my way back. And there's a way about going it, or there's a way of going about it that's better than others. But sometimes people literally just like careen off of the path and be like, well, whatever's going to happen is going to happen. But they're ready for that. They've mentally prepared themselves for the unknown, that what ifs, you know, and they take those risks. They take those chances, you know. And without doing that, how much are we like restricting or limiting ourselves to really unlock our true potentials?
Exactly.
You know,
and I think that's the key thing too, is like a lot of, I always relate a lot to fitness. Like one of the key things that I always say is that the scariest path is going to be the hardest path, because your body's going to kick like a stallion to get you to stop. Like, oh, this is not normal.
This is shocking.
What we normally do. Yeah. We usually complain about life. We usually don't do this. We're usually speeding down the road, or we're usually, you know, complaining and eating these chips or getting lost in all these video games or TV and just doing nothing in life. Why are we making a change? And then your mind will, or your body mind, not your mind, not your conscious mind, your body mind will start to try and rear you back in to doing those old habitual habits. And dude, it's a daily battle. I don't know if you got into Joe Dispenza, if you ever got in or heard of him.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually going to one of his retreats next year. It's a week-long retreat where he does, it's a brutal retreat, but it's beautiful. He has, I think, five or six a year. They're always booked up. But basically, it's 7 days long. Every day, you do three meditations. You start out at 4 a.m. in the morning. I think you end sometimes at 8 at night. But you do these meditations to basically reprogram your mind. And during this whole retreat, they actually have neurological systems. Like, it's neuroscientist different like programs. They actually hook you up to brain monitors, mm-hmm. and they, to everyone, not just one person, they hook it up to everyone.
Oh, wow.
And they show you exactly when and where your mind, your program starts to change, and you'll see it, like your entire brain, because usually you're only using certain parts of your brain.
Yeah.
During the day, but during these meditations that he takes you through, he has proven science, and this dude is crazy. Like, he's changed people's in crazy ways, but the way he does it is it's all through you. He shows you your true power, like you were saying, that everything that we need is here in the here and now, in the present moment, and that if we realize how powerful we truly are, we can heal ourselves. Mm-hmm. And that's the key thing, is during his meditations, he's healed people from cancer, not being able to see, not being able to walk. He's made them walk again. But the key thing is that you only are able to get, so they did a research during his meditation. They had a lady with cancer actually go up there, and he took her through the whole meditation. They had her hooked up to the brain scanner. And during the brain scan, they actually saw her brain change. Like, it lit up, like, and you, she actually had a physical reaction too. Like, you know, when people are like, they have this gasp of like something yeah. happened. That's kind of how it was. And basically he says it's the heart bursting open, you know, and you start leading a life from the heart. And basically they looked at it, they saw her brain, and they're like, he was like, well, she just did something crazy there. And yeah. she actually went to the doctors. And the very next day they said they didn't know where her breast cancer was. And it was just gone. But the crazy thing about that is that she actually went back. And the very next day, right after, she went back to the old programming of her mind. And the doctors did another scan. Her cancer was back. And it was very weird how it happens. But that's how it happens. If you program your mind and then you go back to your old past, your familiar past, you're starting to think from the same place where your cancer came from. And that's going to come back. So. That, yeah, I'm actually going to one of his retreats out in, we haven't chose where, he has different locations. There's a few out of the country. There's a few in the country. But yeah, we're trying to go to Cancun. That's the one we're trying to go to.
Yeah. I've been seeing a lot of things like this pop up in different circuits. You know, of course, I have a very, and this isn't like, I always say, you know, my, how I represent myself is not a, I'm not the spokesperson for Germanic heathenry or paganism as a whole. And, you know, I just do what I do the way I do it. And I have, you know, sources or you know, I draw my inspiration from certain root sources, that sort of thing. But I take a very animistic approach to my spirituality, you know, so I find commonalities and nuances across different things that I can relate with. But this particular thing where people are either venturing off out of their comfort zones, or they're going to things like a retreat where it's like guided, almost shamanic in a way, you know, guided meditations, or, you know, someone who is the expert, someone who is the mentor that, it, you know, puts themselves in a position to help people. And people are going for these things, you know, even if it's not a retreat sort of scenario, they're finding out that what people have been saying for so long about, you know, awaken your higher self and all this like seemingly like woo woo type stuff, like there's legitimacy to it all. There is real factual scientific benefits to it all. And I think people are starting to wake up to the fact that it's not just a bunch of hogwash, you know what I mean? It's not just some hippy dippy stuff that someone who did too much shrooms or dropped too much acid or whatever had this revelation. Like, no man, there's real facts behind this. There's science that backs this stuff up. And I'm glad to see people from different walks of life realizing this, because the world needs it. Humanity needs it. We're hurting, you know, humanity is hurting. And whether it's spirituality, whether it's health and wellness, I mean, it all, I think, has, you know, everything ties into one another eventually, you know, because like you were saying before, how, you know, you were working out and you were feeling a certain way, but you really didn't experience the full benefit of it until you looked inward and started feeding yourself with good things and started focusing on the nutrition aspects of it, you know, that's, you know, healing from within and manifesting that wellness from within first, and taking care of what's inward and allowing it to manifest outward and look at the benefits that come of it.
Yeah. I think that's the key, is that I actually just made a video about that, is like, you people that keep trying to go to the gym and working out. And I tried it. Like, there were times I tried intermittent fasting for 19-5. It was a 19-5, so 19-hour fast, 5-hour eating. I tried eating healthy. I tried eating whole foods. I tried working out for 2.5 hours. I see no results. But the key difference was here. There was something inside of me that was bothering me, and I didn't want to face it. But when I switched it, when I was able to actually look at that and change that, the diet that I had had no effect on it. And I started doing a diet, a simple diet, and it literally changed my effects. But there's also scientific research that when your mind and body are in stress, that you're able to collect fat a lot faster, almost 3 to 5 times faster than you are in homeostasis. Whereas you eat, like, let's say you eat 500 calories over your normal calorie intake, and when you're in stress mode, whereas you're in homeostasis, you'll lose that body weight. Where when you're in a stress mode, you're gonna gain exponential. Yeah, you're gonna start getting, because your body starts thinking it's in a fight or flight.
Oh, therefore, yeah, crisis. It starts
to store that. Yeah, and then when your body's always in fight or flight, stressing out, you start to retain all of that. And I experienced that. I got a bit chubby at one point, and it was all emotional eating. And I tried working out for hours and stuff like that. And you're not going to get results. And that's the first part of my phase in my nutrition plan is metabolic restoration. Whatever fad diet, whatever diet you were on, crazy, because a lot of people think they go on these massive deficits and that's the answer. No. You can keep that up for maybe a week or two, and then your metabolism is messed up, and then it all goes bad. And then that's why we start the first phase of my fitness and nutrition training is metabolic restoration. So we figure out what's going on, what is causing this stress. We figure that out first, so that way when we start getting into the nitty-gritty stuff, we have exponential results. That's why when I told you that I had a client that lost 40 pounds in 5 months, that was the first thing we focused on. I didn't even have him start working out. I literally just said, show up at the gym and leave. And that's literally what he did. The second week we did a 12-minute workout. And he's like, that's it. And I'm like, yeah, go home. Like, that's all you need to do today. And then he went home and he started noticing that he wasn't stressing. He started getting better sleep. He started drinking more water, cut out alcohol the third week. I didn't even tell him to cut out the alcohol. He chose to. And then slowly but surely, he just started making these little changes. 40 pounds later, he went from, he was only, I think he was five, he's 5'5", and he was 185 pounds, which is like that's massively overweight. But he had told me he wanted to get to 140 pounds, which I was like, man, that's massive, but we'll see. And he had a very big why. That's what it stuck with me, is his why was really big. So after the first week of training, I saw he was dedicated, and I was like, okay, like, he incorporated fasting on his own. I just gave him the ropes. I was like, hey, like, what, one thing we could work on. Okay, boom, let's do that. Did you do it? How do you feel? Every little step. And that's what people don't understand, is it's changing habits and changing your emotions first.
Reprogramming.
Yes, reprogramming your mind. And when you do that, I call it the metabolic restoration phase, because not only are you fixing your mental, you're fixing your metabolic, where everything happens. When you fix your mind, you start to fix your body, and your body's able to process what it really needs. And then it stops stressing out. And when you stop stressing out, you're able to just let go, you know, and things just start magically happening. But it's always the ones that, and people don't really believe me until they start doing this with me, but they're like, how did you get them to lose that much weight? I just told them to show up to the gym and leave. That's it. Lost 40 pounds. But that's literally why. What it takes.
Yeah. The why, you know, like you're saying, his why was strong. And I've talked about this too with people, guests and friends alike, you know, because I think we, as a species, I mean, humanity, we have a propensity of doing things just because like somebody else did it first. And kind of like, you know, growing up in the environment that you grew up, you know, and the environment that I grew up in, you know, everybody was doing things because of what somebody else told them to do. And, using fear to persuade them to do it. There was no free thinking with people, you know what I mean? And they didn't have their purpose was, I don't want to burn in hell for eternity, you know. Yeah. But it was a fear, you know. It was a fear of this mythical thing that does it exist, does it not? I mean, who knows? They're you know, everything's based off of this other person's perspective, this other person's angle. And I get it. I'm not trying to bash anyone for their religious or spiritual beliefs, because I have my own and I feel convicted in them, and everybody has it, and that's perfectly fine. If it works for you, then fine. But I guess what my point is, do you really believe it? Is why you're doing what you're doing, are you purpose driven for the right reasons, or are you just going through the motions because you don't want to run the risk of pissing off, you know, this person, that person, you know, ending up in the wrong place because of, you know, what somebody else said? If you don't have a purpose to do something, you know, so many people that I've come across do things because, again, it's in a book, or somebody 500, 600, 700 years ago wrote about it, that's how they did it. And it's like, yeah, well, that's what worked for them. Right.
Yeah.
That's why they did it. It's because they it got written down or got documented. And so, yeah, we have it as like a source, but you know, they had a purpose. They had a reason why. Find your reason why. Find your purpose. Why are you doing X, Y, and Z? And if you don't have it, then I think you're only going to get so far. You're not going to really reap the true benefits of the thing that you're trying to accomplish if you don't have a strong purpose behind
it. So I have a question, like for you. I'm really interested in your beliefs. Actually, I want to hear all about it, because I've heard a lot about paganism, but what is it? Because I know you brought up Germanic, and there was a little bit of studies that I've done with it, but I don't know much about it. So you got to explain a little bit about it for me.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So yes, paganism is an overarching term or an umbrella term for polytheistic spirituality, polytheistic religion. So whereas, you know, monotheism, things like Christianity, Judaism, Islam, you know, their higher power is singular, right? There is one God in their beliefs, whereas paganism all over the world brings about polytheistic beliefs. So multiple deities that make up either pantheons or a collective of divine beings. And heathenry is a term that's usually used to describe the Northern European or Germanic flavor of paganism, you know. So where things kind of started off there probably has roots in Indo-European, you know, countries. And it eventually formulates into this or eventually reached areas like Scandinavia, you know. So your mainland continental Germanic areas, so where Germany is now, used to be Saxony. England was England is what was Angleland. And then those pagan beliefs that originated there eventually made their way further north into Scandinavia, so Denmark, Sweden, Norway, and eventually Iceland, as it became settled. But so the belief systems, right, kind of have a lot of similarities. There are nuances that are shared, but your gods and goddesses of the Germanic peoples are figures like Odin, Thor, and some others, of course, but like Tyr, Frigg, and Freya, Freyr. Like, there's different gods and stuff, but those are the divine, like those are the sacred beings. And at different points in time and in different areas of the world, some of those gods were focused on more than others. So the Swedes particularly had a very strong affinity towards a god named Freyr, and the nobility among the Danes and some of the other neighboring countries were very they had a strong affinity to Thor, because he was the god of the people. He is considered as like the protector of Earth, the protector of Midgard, Midgard meaning a place in the cosmos of those belief systems. So Midgard is like this middle yard, middle area, and that's Earth. That's where humans are. And then there are other realms that in the stories are homes to different beings, you know. So Asgard is the home of the gods. It is the yard of the divine. So Asgard is where the gods dwell, and Midgard is where humans dwell. And then you have different realms that throughout the stories have again are the homes of other spiritual and divine beings. But at its core, you know, it is a very nature and community based folkway belief system. So you know, things to do with nature and the earth itself and growing things and being frugal in that way. It's the way our ancient ancestors lived. You know, they lived off of the land. Mm-hmm. The word itself, heathen, is etymologically rooted back to old Proto-Germanic words that meant literally just country people, heath dwellers. Mm-hmm. The heathens later on became a derogatory term, because when Christianity began to spread in Europe, pagan and heathen were terms to describe those who did not adopt the belief systems of the church, of the Christian faith. So it became derogatory, and it became a slur as in a way. But etymologically, like linguistically speaking, like heathen, heathen is a word that again has its roots in meaning the people that lived in the country, the heath dwellers, the people that lived outside of the normal. They were villages. They were village people. You know what I mean? They were small tribes that originated in continental Germanic lands, and then they eventually just migrated and spread and found new lands to set up in, and their indigenous beliefs went with them. So they were, they were simple people. Of course, later on, and I say later on, I mean like around the 700s, that's when the quote unquote Viking Age kind of started. Mm-hmm. And it lasted till, you know, about the year 1100, 1200, somewhere in that vicinity, right? Like it lasted a relatively short period of time, about 500 years or so. But the Viking Age was when Christianity started to infiltrate these areas, and people got mad about it. They're like, no, you can't convert us. You won't convert us. You know, we're going to fight. And so, yes, there were some definite, there's definitely times when people converted because it worked well for them to do so. That, and also the kings that ended up, you know, the kings that were in power who said, we're not pagans anymore, we're Christians. And I said, mm-hmm. So, I mean, you got to do what the king says, right? So there was a lot of that going on, but there were definitely struggles and fights to preserve their indigenous beliefs, their pagan beliefs. And it resulted in wars and death and stuff. So, you know, when people hear about gods like Odin and Thor and Viking Age and stuff, there tends to be this people like ourselves, like modern day pagans that are Germanic heathens, like, oh, you're a Viking, you know, people will say that they use the term Viking to describe people that believe in those gods.
Okay.
And so the term itself, Viking, is a time period, the Viking Age. Yes, it happened with and it involved Scandinavians and Germanic peoples, but not all German descendants were Vikings, right? And not all Scandinavians were Vikings. People that did raiding and actually sailed to other areas and founded places and raided and pillaged and things like they were doing what is called Viking, or they were the word is Vikingur. It's an old word that is, you were the man, you were the person who went to go Viking. Mm-hmm. So you were a pirate, you were a raider. And none of us now in the modern day are that. Like, we're not Vikings. We don't go raiding. Yeah. We don't go pillaging. We're not, you know, taking over monasteries and stealing stuff and bringing it back to our families. Those were certain specific people that did certain specific things. And yes, that thing is called to go Viking. So it's like to go, if I went swimming, I'm going to go swim. If I'm hiking, I'm going to go hike. Well, if I'm going to go Viking, then that means I'm going to go pillage and raid and do all these nasty things. But yeah, we're not Vikings. We are pagans or heathens. Gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah. And I love that. I was, when I first started, like, so my transition from Christianity the first time, it was Greek mythology. But I didn't think it was mythology. I actually believed in it. I mean, I, of course, when my dad found the books, it was, they're just books, you know?
Yeah. But well, with such a big,
to me,
with such a big family, I mean, so is in, you know, if I'm prying too much, is all your family still where you left from? Like, do they still believe the things that you?
No, only two of them. Really? Only two of the 18. It had bigger impact on some of the family members than it did on me. Some of them are like, one of them in particular, two of them actually, they're both females, and they had a huge impact done on them. Just like, they just can't let go of what it did to them mentally.
Yeah.
It broke relationships, like between them and their dad and their parents and their mom too. So our mom and dad were so deep into it that it was like, oh, what we're doing is wrong. And they were cast out. It was like, oh, like, they're, don't be like them. But they actually turned out, one's a lawyer, the other one's very successful as well. Mm-hmm. And it's like, man, like, why?
Isn't it crazy how those belief styles, like that mentality, how it can destroy something that is just so inherently wholesome? Family. I mean,
yeah,
you know, like, who else do you have if you don't have family? And that may sound like I just, you know, got finished watching Fast and the Furious, whatever. You ain't got family, you ain't got nothing. But no, but what I'm like, for me specifically, like heathenry and paganism, like, our beliefs are, you know, your kin, your family, like the history of the Germanic people and all the way from before Christian times up through and including the Viking Age is riddled with sagas and stories about, you know, who did this, that thing to the other, a person of their family, and then how vengeance was enacted, or they, you know, family meant something back then. And, you know, it wasn't always your blood family that meant the most to you. It was how family was perceived and how it was seen. So there was a lot of, you know, adoption and fostering that took place. And once that happened, man, like, you were in, like, you were part of the family. And when things got broken, when that family structure, when that family unit deteriorated, it was bad. Like, it was bad news. Yeah. And I've always really, like, in my journeys and in my, you know, life and then how I've progressed, seeing how I was raised and what I was brought up in, like, there were definitely things about it that are, I would say, good, morally and ethically good things. Again, I grew up working on a farm and having an idea of how to live off the land, how to hunt, how to fish, how to stay warm and dry in the woods and do all these survival type things, right? Learning those things. Those are great things. Those are good things. And how just like the religiosity of it is what took over and it overshadowed the fundamental purpose of what that group had as a potential, right? We could have literally been a self-sustaining, you know, relied on each other, very tribal, in its construct. And the religiosity of it started to just peel things away. There's hardly anything left of it now. Mm. You know, the people have either died, or the kids that those people had that have died have gone away because they're like, fuck this.
Yeah.
Whack job, cuckoo, you know, stuff. And I was one of them, you know. I was one of them who was like, I'm out of here, guys. You know, I left New York when I was 22. Yeah. 22 years old.
Farmland out in New York.
Yeah. I'm originally from New York, but I moved to Tennessee almost 20 years ago.
Wow.
To get away from it, you know?
So where did you guys have the farmland in New York at?
So it's Orange County, Hudson Valley. Okay. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Not quite as far up into the Adirondacks, but kind of, gotcha. I would say Hudson Valley. So, you know, the lower foothills of the Catskill Mountain Range.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I was born and raised on Long Island. And sometimes, depending on how upset I am and or how much I've had to drink, the Long Island accent comes out a bit more.
Yeah.
But so I'm from there. My parents are from there. I was born there. My sister and I were raised there. And then, yeah, when I was like 12 or 13, we moved up to where my mom lives now. They've had that house, you know, or since 96 or 97. And they've been there ever since. Well, my dad just passed away this year, so now it's just my mom and my sister that live up there. But yeah, it's all right. Thanks. Yeah, it's just like seeing the, you know, I don't know how old you are, but over the years, like when you leave something and you start looking at it from the outside and you're like, damn, I can't believe I actually at one point in time went along with this.
Yeah.
It's shocking sometimes.
Yeah. No, I went through the same thing, dude. It was like, because as a young kid, I grew up in it for 16 years and it was like, I didn't know. Like, I was so young that I was like, oh, this is in it. Your subconscious is wide open. So anything that comes in, you're like, oh, this is amazing. Until you start to see, like, wait a second. Like, and then I start telling this to different people and they're like, you lived that life? Like, that's crazy. And I'm like, wait, I thought that was just normal. I thought everyone had that type of life.
You didn't think it was like a cult at the time.
Yeah. And then you go, you look away, and then you start noticing there. Now, to say that there's things that weren't good about the way I grew up, I'd be wrong, because I'm very out there. We were kept away from television and stuff like that, which made me be very more in tune and in touch with humanity and with other people. So I think that in that way, it was so, so good for me. But the limiting beliefs about money, about being able to go out there and give myself to the world. And that's what it's about, is like becoming the very best version of yourself and then going and giving him to the world. Like, what is that person that you admire? What does he look like? What does he breathe? What does he talk about? What does he think? What does he enjoy? Now give that person to the world.
Yeah.
We weren't taught that. And just looking back, it's like, I try, the best thing I can do now is just to reprogram that and just also to look at the good, because gratitude is the highest emotion in the emotional scale. So always thinking on gratitude is starting to reprogram my mind to think of the good, and instead of thinking from fear, shame, lack, and all those low emotional vibrations. And it's more so thinking in a high vibration frequency with gratitude and love and being conscious about this stuff too. So that's like the number one key. But man, I think that's crazy, man. Like growing up on a farm, because I've always wanted to do that. Like, I think those are the simplest lives. Like, I messed with a girl when I was for a little bit, and she grew up in the South, and it was all like barefoot stuff like that, farming, go out fishing, stuff like that. And it's the way she talked about it, it was just like, oh, life was simple.
Yeah.
And she actually, but of course, same thing, religion. It's crazy.
Whether it's religion or not, I think anything that has the component of fear added to it as an element of control. Because again, you know, you're talking about things like if it's doctrine, if it's somebody saying that, well, it says it in this book, therefore it has to be this way or else, right? The consequences are so incredibly terrifying that you're like, I absolutely don't want to do anything that would get me there. You know what I mean? Yeah. I don't want to burn in eternity. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like that's frightening. Anything that does that. And I think there are other things too that can, even if it's not like a very popular, I don't know, a perversion of Christianity, because that's really what it is. I mean, I know people, I have people in my life and in my family who are, as I would say, good Christian people. You know what I mean? Like they have a moral code. They follow their doctrine, and they are good people. And then there's others that I've known and have come across within my life that have been that doctrine has been perverted to them, and they push that perversion out, and it becomes something twisted and not what it wasn't ever intended to be. But even stuff outside of that, like if you have to tell someone and give them an angle and use fear to try to make your point,
mm-hmm.
probably not the thing I wouldn't want to be. I've never, since I've gotten into heathenry, paganism, right, since I found this path, I've never tried to use this as a fear tactic on others. Not even my own family, who I walked away from essentially and said, I'm done with you guys for the time being, because I can't abide it anymore. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make sense to me. It doesn't speak to me. It doesn't do anything for me. Once I found my path, like, it wasn't like, and now let me go back and try to convince them why they're wrong. Mm-hmm. Never has been a thing.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Same. Yeah.
Like, I'm finding own peace, my own purpose, and I'm finding people that align with it mm-hmm. naturally and organically. And yes, there's work to be done. Like, there are things that, you want to be accessible. You want to, like, kind of with you, like, you have a vision, you've branded it, you've made it something that you are finding the best version of you and sharing it with the world. I love that. And it could be anything, finding the best version of yourself, and then don't be selfish about it. Don't keep it from people. Share it with people.
Yeah.
Because people need that, man. Like I said before, the world needs healing. The world needs visionaries and people with good, wholesome visions and purpose. If you can't find a way, then make a way is what I've always said. Like, find someone that can be a mentor for you, or at the very least, guide you, give suggestions. And if you can, or if it's a little bit tough, man, and get out there and do it yourself. Like, start doing the thing, start putting in the work. It's better to try and fail than to never try at all.
Man, that's so true. And I think one of the biggest things people hold on to is material things. Mm. Is we're so stuck on, I need this and this and this to get to where I want to be. But yet you can be where you want to be in here first, and everything else will come. Like, a lot of people say, I can't be rich without having money. Like, I don't have money to do that. I don't have a good job. I don't have an education. But yeah, if you look at all the billionaires and millionaires of the world, who were they at one point? They had no money. Like, most of them went into debt. And that's the thing. Like, I try to teach people, stop being afraid to chase your dreams. If you're thinking you can't go to a mastermind, or you can't hire a mentor because you don't have enough money, go broke for it. Why? Because that person has the exact thing that you're looking for, and they're going to teach you how to get it. And that's the whole point. Like, find somebody. Like, everyone's had a coach. Like, Jordan had a coach, Kobe Bryant had a coach, all these great, like Alexander the Great had a coach, and all these people were coached by great people. But if you think that, if you're constantly saying and letting money constantly restrict your life, you're always going to have that mentality, and it's never, your life is never going to come to you. Like, for me, like, I would rather spend, my goal is to one day spend $250,000 on personal growth. Because why would I spend that much money on personal growth? Because that, and probably even more, probably millions, because I know that that is the one thing that can make me more money and give me more time, give me happiness, is hiring people that already know where I want to be and learning exactly from them. Like, one of the coaches that I like to listen to, he had talked about basically saying, he said that basically he wanted to learn how to do Facebook ads. And the way he did it is he found somebody that knew how to do it. He asked him how much he makes in a month. He asked him how much he would charge him for an hour a week or hourly to train him one-on-one, that he had to train him, that this guy that was asking for the help had to do all the work, that the teacher couldn't do any of the work. He had to do all the hands-on work, and that he would pay him for whatever he wanted. So the guy said, $750 a week or an hour, I'll charge you. He's like, fine, I don't care. Within a month, he learned how to do it, made millions of dollars off of it. And that's what people don't understand, is when you learn from the best, you learn the little tweaks and stuff. But I also learned is that you can't buy courses. Go and get hands-on, like, feedback from these people. Don't be, spend the extra money to get personal training from people, whether it's fitness, whether it's cooking, whether it's any of this stuff. Go and get hands-on and you'll learn. Like, don't be, I have one of my mentors, he was 60 years old and he didn't find what he loved and didn't make his first million until he was 55. Mm-hmm. After 55 years of searching, he did everything. He finally did it. Mm-hmm. And it was like, what part of the journey? What is too long? What is too short? You know?
Yeah, never give up.
Don't be afraid. Yeah, don't be afraid to embark on this journey. It's dark, it's lonesome, but it's worth it.
Yeah, man. As long as we're upright, as I say, as long as we're upright, breathing air.
Yes.
I mean, you got the ability. There's nothing stopping us except ourselves. You
know? Exactly. Exactly. And we always over exaggerate the situation. Because usually whenever I'm not in a good mood, I'm like, man, I want to give up. But then you just go to sleep or you just keep going. And then you wake up the next morning, you're like, let's do it again. Because mm-hmm. when you have a blueprint to follow every day, and that's my other thing is like, I give people programming that they can follow every day. So it's very simple and easy to achieve their goals. You just wake up, you knock those out. My thing is try and get all my stuff done as soon as possible. The sooner I can just relax. You know, mm-hmm. and that's what I do. You don't want to just kill yourself. You want to be in it for the long run, yeah. However long it's going to take, 10, 15 years. So don't put so much pressure on doing so much in a day, whereas yeah. you can do so much more in 5-10 years, because that's minimal. It's going to take 1 to 3 years to do some of the things that you really want to do.
Well, it takes 10 years to be an overnight success?
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
It's a marathon, not a sprint.
I don't understand. It's like if you look at the story of the bamboo, how long does it take for a bamboo to grow? Once it's in the floor, I think it takes almost 8 months. You don't see anything. Yeah. And then within 3 weeks, it's at its highest point. Like, that's what people don't understand. And I think it's a lot longer for the growing point. Like, it's underground. It's a lot longer.
Yeah.
But that's what people don't understand is like, you have to put in the time, you have to put in and let it grow. Cause you can't just go after it and just think that, oh, within a month I'll be rich. That's not how it works. If yeah. you're willing to put in 5 years and not see a dime, you'll win. It's the person that enjoys the walk instead of the destination that
yep.
always wins.
Yep. I've said that for the longest too, you know, where it's about the journey. It ain't about the destination, because again, you're not going to find those nooks. You're not going to find those goat paths, those rabbit holes. You're not going to find those deep and dark places to explore. If you're just hauling ass, rushing through it, trying to get to the end,
yeah.
You're going to miss so much along the way that you could have benefited from. So that's life, no matter yeah. what you do, whether it's trying to pursue wealth, whether it's fitness, whether it's your, you know, spirituality. I mean, anything. It takes time and nurturing mm-hmm. and organic, you know. So much of what I follow is community based, and but that's the thing that's lost nowadays. Like, people at large just they don't have the same sense of community as we once did. And trying to force that only ends up with it doesn't take hold, the roots don't sink in, and then it just fizzles out, you know. Mm-hmm. So you got to be in it for the long haul. You got to be ready to put in the work and the time, the effort to nurture it along its way and see its growth as it happens organically. Yes, feed it. Yes, nurture it. Make sure that if anything pops up that needs to be trimmed out or cleaned up along the way, that you're taking care of it. But let it grow, man. Like, let the roots sink in, let it take hold, let it blossom, let it die along the way. I mean, there's all of these like metaphysical things that you can add to the growth dynamic.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's we see it around us everywhere. It's mm-hmm. we're a part of it. We're part of that yeah. experience. Mm-hmm. So what we apply that energy to is gonna be an extension of us.
Exactly.
Our whole experience. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But this has been great, man. I'm going to wrap it up here. If you don't mind, just, you know, stick around so I can you know, bid you a farewell. But yeah, man, everybody that's listening and watching today, David Masano, right?
Yes.
It, right. But yeah, David Masano. I mentioned, I don't know, real quick before, I don't want to speak out of turn because did you serve in the military?
I did serve. That's a whole nother story.
Yeah. And I didn't want to, if that's a whole other story and stuff, then I don't want to get too deep into it, but I do want to say thank you for your service.
Of course.
And I'm sure that it had a part in
it
everything,
did.
You know?
Yes, it did.
You're welcome to say something really briefly if you want about it before we wrap up. So
that's what put me, it gave me the discipline and the mindset and the grit to be chasing this and be able to be strong enough to give this to the world.
So you had that formal training,
yes,
to put you in a position to apply it in the civilian sector, in your civilian life. And that's great. I'm glad to hear you have had an experience, you know, from your childhood through your youth, such a potentially life-changing experience, you know, battling with really dark things, that you wanted to end it. You pushed through, you found a place to apply yourself in. You also went to the extent of, you know, serving your country, and that experience really helped amplify your ability to apply yourself and do these things. And now here you are in the West Coast of the United States, helping other people, and helping people, I guess, maybe across the world too. I mean, I don't know how far your clientele base is, but the sky's the limit. I feel like you've got that vision to get out of your own backyard. and really help people, and it's been exciting to hear the passion that you shared with us today, and I appreciate that.
Of course, thank you so much for letting me share it. That's my goal, is to get it out there as far and wide as possible, because I know it's going to reach many hearts.
And I know that there's people in the audience that I tend to attract. There's always people looking for ways to just get through life, you know, and find ways of getting through life in the best way possible. So, you know, for anybody out here listening and watching that is touched by what David's been talking about today, you know, all of his details are going to be linked in the description and show notes. So be sure to give him a follow, like, subscribe, whatever the thing does asks you to do. If what he's saying resonates with you, then follow him along. Cause as you know, as a content creator, that speaks a lot, and that helps a lot, you know, getting that interaction. So be definitely, you know, definitely be sure to follow David and all of his things.
Definitely.
All right, David, I'm going to talk with you a bit offline. For all of my listeners and followers that are tuning in today and watching this, thank you so much. Be sure to check the description and show notes for all the ways that you can support Midgard Musings, the Random Heathen Ramblings as a whole. All of my socials are linked in that link tree. So click on them, do all the things that these fickle algorithm gods so ingraciously demand of us. And until we talk to each other again, may the gods continue to notice you, and may your ancestors smile upon you. And thank you, David, for being on here today.